I'm here at the home of Mrs. Delcy Fuqua. There I did it, Fuqua, in Scottsville, Kentucky, to tape an interview on the role of quilting in her life. The date is January 22nd, 1986, and we are at her home at 404 North 6th Street here in Scottsville. In order to keep my record straight, Mrs. Fuqua, are you agreeable to being interviewed on tape?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. First of all, give me your full name, and would you spell it, please?
Delcy, D-E-L-S-I-E, F-U-Q-U-A, Fuqua, Delcy Fuqua.
Do you have a middle name?
No, I was a Whittemore. I use a middle initial, and that's W-H-I-T-T-I-M-O-R-E, Delcy Whittemore Fuqua.
Okay, and how your husband's name?
Herbert Fuqua, H-E-R-B-E-R-T, F-U-Q-U-A. He uses a middle initial E.
What does it stand for?
Eugene.
Well, now, all right, let's say the whole name. Okay, then that was Herbert
Eugene Fuqua.
Okay. And are you employed?
No. I work just at home.
And what is your husband's occupation?
He's the manager of the electric office, Tri-County Electric in Scottsville.
All right. Now, what is your birth date?
February the 9th, 1929.
Which makes you how old?
Almost 57.
Almost. Right now you're 56.
I'm 56.
Okay. Your parents' names?
Okay, my dad was James Arthur Whittemore.
Spell it.
James, J-A-M-E-S, A-R-T-H-U-R, W-H-I-T-T-I-M-O-R-E.
And his birth date? The year, or the whole date, if you...
Okay, he was born in 1895, June the 5th, 1895.
Where?
At Lafayette, Tennessee.
All right, and what was his occupation?
He was a farmer.
All his life?
Mm-hmm.
And your mother's name, including her maiden name, her full name?
She was Bera Beatrice Woodcock Whittemore.
All right, spell all that for us.
B-E-R-A, B-E-A-T-R-I-C-E. W-O-O-D-C-O-C-K, W-H-I-T-T-I-M-O-R-E.
And her birth dates?
Her birth date was January the 11th, 1900.
Okay, something I did, I assume they're deceased?
Yes, they are.
And when your father's date, when he died?
He died September the 22nd, 1955.
And your mother?
She died June the 19th, 1982.
And she was born what year?
She was born in 1900.
She was born, okay, we did. So she was from 1900 to 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And where was she born?
She was born in Lafayette, Tennessee.
Okay. And where were you born?
I was born in Lafayette, Tennessee.
You were born in Lafayette, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Not in town, on a raft. It was outside of town.
Outside of town. All mm-hmm. right. And, do you have any children?
I have two sons.
And you want to give me their names and birth dates?
Okay, Paul Dwight, that's P-A-U-L-D-W-I-G-H-T. He was born at Lafayette, Tennessee, July the 6th, 1951. And then John Keith, J-O-N-K-E-I-T-H, was born in Lafayette, Tennessee, September the 22nd. 1955, and if you will note, that's the same day that my dad passed away.
Oh my, that must have been yes. hard on you.
It was.
In one sense, one gone and one to replace.
Right.
Do they live right close by, your sons?
No, one's in Florida. John Keith and his wife Lisa is in Florida, and Paul White and his wife Pama and three children are in Louisville, Kentucky.
Does the Florida boy in Florida have any children?
No, they don't have any children.
How long have you lived here at this address?
Since 1960.
And what brought you here?
My husband was transferred with his work.
Okay. And then where You have lived at this address since 1960?
Since 1960, in this house.
And where did you live before that?
I lived in Lafayette, Tennessee, in Macon County, out on Route 3, about 7 miles out of town, which is about 10 miles from the Kentucky-Tennessee line.
Okay, then. You're almost a Kentuckian.
Almost.
And how long did you live there?
I was born in that house and lived there until I married in 49.
I see. And then where did you live from 1949 after you married? Did you live in the same place?
I lived up in town, Lafayette.
In town.
Until we moved to Kentucky.
Until you moved. So from 49 until 60, you lived in town.
Right.
And then in 60, you moved here to the garden spot of the universe,
Allen County. Allen County, that's right.
All right. Tell me about where you went to school.
I went to a one-room school that was about 2 miles from my house. It was in what's called Cold Spring School. And I went there 8 years. And then I didn't go to high school because I would have had to walk 5 miles to the bus. But I did go back to school in 1970 and got my GED.
Very good. That was here at the...
In Allen County, at the old Scottsville High School.
Well, that's great. What did you expect as you were growing up did you have any career goals? What did you have in mind that you do with your life?
I don't remember any.
Was your purpose in life to get married and raise a family?
Well, not really, because I didn't start dating until I was nearly 18 years old, so not really. I just lived every day as it came along. I did housework at home and worked on the farm. And I roped to a lot of soldier boys in the 1940s and had lots of friends, but not anything in particular. I just lived my life from day to day.
And you didn't do work public?
No, I didn't work public.
And what's your church affiliation?
I'm a member of the Church of Christ.
Have you always been affiliated with the Church of Christ?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's here in Scottsville.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about quilting. Now, when did you learn to quilt?
I don't remember. I can't remember that early.
All right.
That I tried. Now, as far as if you want to know when I learned to be a quilter, whether it would be presentable quilting, then I might remember that. I would say I was a teenager.
A teenager, but in your early years?
In my early years.
When you were little, tell me about, you say it wasn't presentable, but you tell me about maybe how you learned to quilt. Who taught you?
My mother. My mother's mother had passed away. She told me about it. I don't remember either one of my grandmothers. My mother's mother passed away when my mother was 17 years old. And she had to pretty well learn to do for the family herself. She learned to make the quilt. She made her own bats. The bats means the inside of the quilt, the batting.
How did she do that?
She did that with cards, what they call cards. I have the set of cards that she used, and she used them even after that I could remember. She still made her own bats. We would stack them on chairs, on the ladder back chairs, and they were really soft and fluffy and made real nice quilt. And the materials back in those days was a problem because they just didn't have a lot of them. They had to make everything count. And a lot of the pieces they used would be small. She would use a lot of feed sacks my daddy fed a lot of hogs and cows, and she would wash these sacks and bleach them out and use those. And we have, even after I could remember was a teenager, we would go out in the yard and build a fire under the wash kettle, and we would use a package of dye, D-Y-E, that we would color these feed sacks with.
Well, the cotton, did she grow her own cotton?
No. We had some kinfolks that did, but not that I can remember.
Did you have to pick seeds out?
Yes, we did.
Tell me, I guess that was...
Okay, I had a real old aunt. It was my daddy's aunt, my great aunt, that lived down the road from us. And she would come to our house, and she always wore a long dress all the way down to the top of her shoes and had her apron on. And she would come with her cotton in her apron. And she would stay a while at night, and she would lay this cotton in front of the fire so that it would get warm, because if it's warm, the seeds come out better. And we would help her pick the seeds out of this cotton. And then she gave us cotton in return, and we would make the bats for our quilts out of it because we helped her. But she did raise her own cotton.
Okay.
And that would be our pastime till bedtime, that we would pick the seeds out of the cotton and help Aunt Rosilla. And then we'd walk her back to the curb so that, and watch her all the way to the house because she was such an old lady.
Then you make the cotton up into bats. Your mother would cart it.
She would cart it into
bats. Did you ever do that?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. You helped her.
Uh-huh. I sure did.
How big were the bats? Maybe 4 inches square, 6 inches square?
No, about 3 inches wide and about
eight,
six, seven. Some of them maybe 8 inches long.
Mm-hmm. And so you made your own bats.
Mm-hmm. Little brick shape.
So you were learning to quilt. You were learning about quilting even then.
Even then. When I was even small enough that I could walk under the quilt, I'm sure.
What did you do? Pass the needle back through?
Well, my mother had 4 frames that she would hang her quilts to the ceiling with. And these frames on the ends had so many holes in each end. And they would put the nail down through as big as the quilt was and stretch the quilt taut. They would stretch the lining, lay the bats on it close together, and then put the top on it and sew around this in big stitches to hold it tight. And then they put a rope on each corner. And the end frames were shorter than the side frames. So on the two ends of the end frame, they would tie these ropes and run them through rings up in the ceiling. It would go from one corner of the quilt up through a ring, across to the other ring, and then down to the corner. That way this rope would slide. And for comfort's sake, you could raise it or lower it in quilting then by just sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And it would hang in our living room. There was 5 of us children, and it would hang in our living room, and we lived in a 3-room house. And it would hang there until the quilt was completed. But at night, we didn't have electric lights up over it. We had coal oil lamps. At night, she would roll these ropes around the corners of the quilt and raise it to the ceiling. And then it would hang till the next morning, and then daylight hours, she would take it back down.
And she would work on it.
She would work on it, that's right. And my older sister worked on it.
As we haven't talked about your brothers and sisters, tell me their names.
Okay, I had a brother that was named Desi, D-E-S-S-E. He didn't have a middle name. It was Desi Whittemore.
When was he born?
He was born in 1920. And he died in 1937. He was 17 years old.
Was that an accident or illness?
No, he had been sick all of his life. Back in those days, we didn't have medical knowledge, so we don't know really what it was. Then my sister was named Hassie, H-A-S-S-I-E, and she didn't have a middle name. My daddy didn't believe in naming long names because he had such a long one.
And what, when she married, what was her?
She married a Harper, Herschel Harper. She married in 1940, in January 1940, and died in December 1940. She was 18 years old.
Oh, my.
And then I've got a brother, he's still living, that's J.K., just initials, J.K. Whittemore. He's the manager of the radio station in Tompkinsville, Kentucky.
What year was he born?
He was born in 1927. And then I came along in 29, and then I have a sister that's named Elsie, and she doesn't have a middle name. And she's still living. She lives here in Allen County.
And what's her last name?
Stenson. Mm-hmm. She married William Stenson, and he passed away. My older sister learned to quilt, and of course she died in 1940. But when the 40s come along, see, and I was 10, 11, 12, and on into a teenager in the 40s, the family had had so much sickness and deaths that my mother was way behind on quilting. She had done some, and my sister had helped her quilt. But when the 40s hit, after my older sister passed away, you know, it was really necessary that she really get into some quilting. And that's when that I remember more of the dyeing the feed sacks, and we used patterned flour sacks.
That's when you really got into
That's when I really got into the quilting. But my sister never was interested in it. My youngest sister, Elsie, if she ever learned to quilt, I don't remember it. I don't know anything about her ever learning to quilt.
And your sister who died, did you know why?
No. She married in January, and she'd always been in the house a lot and everything, and she got out an awful lot, was exposed to the weather. And she weighed 205 pounds, and she went on a crash diet, and in less than a year, she weighed 84 pounds.
Oh, my.
And she died. So I'm scared to death of dots. I just don't go on one.
Well, they have to be done.
And done right.
Intelligently.
Right.
Yeah, one can do themselves a lot of harm.
Sure can.
Okay, so then when you learned to quilt then was as a teenager in the 40s, actually.
Right.
And so you dyed fabric. What did you buy, Rit, or do you remember Tintex, or the kind of dye you used, or did you go collect it, or collect the berries and dye with bark and berries?
No, we bought the packages of dye. It was 10 cents a package, and we bought it from the peddler came by peddling. And I don't remember the brand that it was or anything about it, but I just know that it was the dye, and we would get the bright colors. We'd get red and bright yellows and greens and blues. And
boil it out in the wash pot.
We'd boil it outside so that it would set that dye. And then she always rinsed it in salt water to set the dye.
That's right.
And I remember her doing that.
Okay, then where did you go from there after you dyed your fabric?
Well, we used a lot of those things for the linings of the quilts. We did use them for the top sometimes, and she would quilt it in a fan design, with which she would take a stick of chalk and tie a string to it. And that way she could hold the string down in the corner of her block, or in the corner of the quilt to start with, and draw off her fan. And however many lines she would make on one fan, she would start at the next point and make that many lines on the next fan. And that was a lot of the way that she quilted, especially when she needed quilts so badly that it had to be hurry-up quilts.
How about piecing? Did you help her with the piecing?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that. Tell me, what were some of the patterns you used, the first patterns you remember using?
Well, now, the first pattern that I used was the Old Familiar 9 patch, mm-hmm. and stripped it together and set it together with a colored block. This was in about 1942 that my mother sat down. I had bugged her to death wanting a piece of quilt. And pieces was scarce. Of course, she made our clothes. She would buy the prints and make our clothes. And that way, we did have some scraps, and I'd bug her to death. Well, she was getting into the piecing more fancy quilts.
What were the ones she'd been doing before?
Mostly just blocks, sewing the blocks together and alternating the colors to make them pretty, or the 9 patch.
Did she do string quilts?
Yes, she did. She sewed them on Sears Roebuck catalog leaves.
All right. And that was when you had the little bitty pieces.
We had the little tiny pieces, that's right. And we didn't waste anything. Matter of fact, but she had gotten into doing one that was called the winding blade quilt. And she cut her own pattern. The middle of it was actually, it was diamonds that made a star. And then she used some half squares that she went out with the dark piece. The star was the dark print. And then she went out with the half squares. Following on out that it would make what she called the winding blade. And there was only about six blocks of each winding blade that made the quilt.
Could you draw that off?
No, I've tried it already, and I can't get it down exactly like that she had it.
That was...
I can do the star part, but when it comes to alternating this to make it look like what she would do with colors to make the winding blade, I can't do it. I can't remember it well enough.
Isn't that too bad?
That's too bad that I didn't do it 3 or 4 years ago.
Did any of those quilts survive?
Not that I know of. They could have, but
not that
I have access to.
Okay. Go on about the first patterns that you were making.
Okay, in long about 1941 or 42, see, I would have been about 11 or 12 years old. I had bugged her to death about piecing a quilt, wanting to do it all on my own. So she set me down in the fall. She set me down a box of pieces, and she said, now, before spring, I want to see a quilt. Well, I almost had a heart attack because I thought, what a chore to do a whole quilt in that time. But we also had access to batting that we could buy, too. And it was a dark color cotton. They called it cotton. I don't know what the fibers was, but I suppose the most of it was cotton in the early 1940s.
But it wasn't bleached.
It wasn't bleached. It was a coarse like stuff. But when it was washed, it would knot up something terribly. And I didn't want to use that. I wanted to do my bats. But at that particular time, we didn't have enough of the homegrown cotton that I could do it. So I had to use the dark batting in it. But I sat in and pieced the 9 patch and stripped it together. And she did let me do the stripping it together on the sewing machine. She had an old treadle sewing machine. And she didn't have very many needles a lot of the time, so she wouldn't let us children sew because we would break her needles, letting it roll backwards. But that particular quilt, she did let me sew the strips together on the sewing machine. I put the quilt in, and of course she helped me quilt it, and I did get it done.
What kind of bat did you use?
I used the bought batting, and it was $1 a roll.
Mm-hmm. And was a roll enough for a quilt?
A roll was what we used for a quilt, just for a full-size bed.
Do you still have that quilt?
No, I don't. It wore out many, many years ago.
So then your very earliest quilt was a 9 patch.
It was a 9 patch.
And it was hand and machined pieced and
right.
Then hand quilted. What did you quilt around the piece? How did you quilt that?
I think I did it in diagonal lines. Mm-hmm. Each 9 patch in diagonal
line. What did you use to mark them, or did you just go through the corner?
I just went from corner to corner. And probably not very straight, but.
Then what patterns did you go to from there?
Well, in the 40s, I don't remember. I pieced several quilts, but most of them was like just blocks, maybe 6-inch block, and alternate the colors over the quilt or whatever I happened to have. And I know that's why the quilts had worn out so badly was that we was using materials that shouldn't have been used. In other words, we would use a slazy material that I had got the material to make me a blouse, and I would put it in with heavier materials for the lack of materials, mm-hmm. and that caused the quilts not to last as good. My mother pieced several fancy quilts. She pieced flower gardens and things like that. Long about 1949, I pieced the Drunkard's Path. I did it all with two colors.
Remember what they were?
That was after my, that I'd married. I used a muslin for one, and the other was a blueprint.
Did you have yourself a stack of quilts to take with you when you married?
No, not too many, but my mother supplied what I needed.
So you didn't have your dowry, the dowry of quilts like the last girl?
No, I didn't make a lot just for that purpose, looking forward to my home. Because when we got a quilt done, we shook the cat in it and then we put it on the bed.
Okay, tell me about shaking the cat in it.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that for years, but we did. Usually at quilting parties and things like that, there would be several people up and down the sides of the quilt and the ends of the quilt. And it was the custom in that community that we would shake the cat in there. And the old fogey saying was that when the cat jumped out of the quilt, whoever jumped out by would be the first one that would be married.
Uh-huh, so that was worth doing, wasn't it?
It was worth doing, that's right. And of course, we always had to three old cats laying around. And
so tell me, shaking the cat, did you fold him up in the quilt or what did you do?
We just put him in the middle and everybody got around the quilt and we just bounced him up and down until
he
got
off.
Tired of it and run out. Uh-huh.
And, well, you say with your quilting bees. Now, did you attend quilting bees as a young girl? Or?
Yes, I did. And well, in the 1940s I did. And I did some before that when I was real small. People in those days didn't have all the conveniences that we have this day and time, but they did have time to go to a neighbor's house to help them quilt. Neighbors would come to our house. And it was a neighborhood that when there was sorrow, everybody grieved. When there was happiness, everybody had joy. And we had not only quiltings, but pea shellings and apple peelings and everything else. We was together. The whole community was just like a big family. And my mother would take us kids and she would go to her daddy's home. My grandpa was the only one of my grandparents that I knew. And he had married again and his wife was named Janie. His name was Clarence Woodcock and his wife was...
What was her whole name?
Janie.
What was her maiden name? You don't know.
I don't remember.
Well, go on.
She had been married before, and her husband died. She was a sexton. She married a sexton as well. And, but I remember when I was a little, real small, going to their house, and I would lay her blocks for her to sew.
How you mean?
Coordinate her colors. Mm. And I remember doing that, and my grandfather was quite a bit older than she was. And I would lay the blocks for her to coordinate her colors, never plan her colors to get her quilts put together on.
And would she piece them while you laid them
and
out?
She would piece them, uh-huh. But we would go to these quilting bees a lot of the time at night. We'd get through early with the farm work, especially in the fall when there wasn't a lot to do in the late fall. When there wasn't a lot of field working to do, we would go to the neighbor's house, and on a Saturday afternoon, we would go to the neighbor's house and quilt when people's work was caught up and things like that. And they would come to our house and quilt. When Mother would have in a quilt, she could count on at least three or four of the ladies in the neighborhood helping her with it. And in the 40s, when there was so many soldier boys had been overseas and everything, and they'd come home, and or one of the couples in the neighborhood was getting married, we'd do the same thing. We would piece a friendship quilt. Everybody, we had a standard 12-inch, 9-patch block that we would do, or we would do the bow tie block. And everybody had the pattern. And we'd get on this old crank telephone and we'd say, let's do so-and-so a quilt. And that's what we would do. And we would embroider our name in it, in the middle block. And then we'd get them all together and we would quilt that quilt. And we'd give that as a wedding gift. or a lot of the soldier boys, when they come home, we did that just because to let them know that we cared about them.
Whether or not they were getting married.
Whether or not they were getting married, we did several of them.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what it's like quilting with a group when you were actually doing that.
You don't know you're working. It's just something that until you experience it, there's no way to tell really what you gain from it. In the first place, you catch up on all the gossip in the neighborhood.
All right, that's important.
It sure is. You catch up on everybody's sorrow, their heartaches. They tell you secrets that they wouldn't tell anybody else. And it makes you close. We didn't have to worry about who was going to sit with him. Of course, my mother wouldn't leave him very much, and either if she left him to go to bed to rest for a while, my daddy was there by his bedside. But we had neighbors sitting there all the time. And it was the same thing with quilting. When you had in a quilt or when you had a hog killing, the neighbors was there to help. And we don't have that closeness of our neighborhoods today. We're living too fast. We're just moving on too fast.
We don't trust each other like we used to.
Right.
Well, what about quilting parties? Did you go to quilting parties?
Well, very few, other than just what we call the quilting bees of the neighborhood there.
Then a quilting party and a quilting bee wasn't any different.
Right, that was just
at
about
that
the same thing.
Uh-huh. As the years have gone by and you've quilted with other people, how has it changed?
It's quite a bit of difference. Now, for the last few years since I've lived here in Scottsville, we have had quilting things at church where we would quilt quilts and we would give a couple of quilts to somebody that their house burns and things like this, and to needy families and so on. And we enjoyed it. We'd take our lunch to the church building, and we have a room that we just do things like that in. And it's good and it's nice, but it's not the same. It's not the closeness.
No, but do you enjoy it?
Yes, it is. It is very enjoyable. It
so
really
they bring a covered dish and share the food,
right.
Do they?
Uh-huh, but sometimes we'd end up taking too long to eat. We wouldn't get as much work done. Like,
so people are longing for the fellowship too.
Right. Mm-hmm. We do need that more and more and more. And even in our homes, we need that more. We really do. I have in a quilt sitting here in my living room across the front door, as a matter of fact. And I need now, instead of sitting here doing it all by myself, invite my neighbors in.
Why don't you?
Well, one or two I did, and they don't know how to quilt and don't have any interest in learning how. So
you don't want them to learn on your quilt, do you?
Well, some of my quilts I don't. Right.
There's that, too.
Right.
I have talked with people who didn't have other people into quilt because they didn't like the way they quilted.
Right. Well, we'll go back to the time that I married in 1949. Now, I married into a quilting family. And I knew my mother-in-law, now she was a perfect quilter.
What was her name?
Lavon, L-A-V-O-N, Fuqua.
Uh-huh.
And she lived on Westmoreland, Route 1. And just about 7 or 8 miles from the Kentucky-Tennessee line. And her mother had quilted before her, and her mother was still living at the time that we married, and she lived until 1968. We married in 49. So I knew Mammy for a long time. And everybody in the neighborhood called her Mammy because she was old. And Herbert's mother, I have known of her quilting a real nice quilt for someone else and getting only $2 for it.
Oh my.
And she wouldn't make a nickel an hour. But yet, in those days, you could buy so much more with $2 than you can this day and time. But still, I felt like that she was cheating herself, but she felt like that she had rather not get anything out of it is to overcharge someone. And that's just the way that she felt.
Well, did you, in the context of your family or any other time, quilt for other people?
No. The only ones I do for other people is for my family that I give to them as gifts and things like that.
And did Mammy or your mother-in-law quilt for other people?
My mother-in-law did. She quilted for other people and got $2 a quilt for it.
And this was in the 40s? Mm-hmm. And 50s.
50s. Mostly in the 50s when I knew about her doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a perfect quilter. I didn't quilt too much on some of her fancy quilts because my stitches was too long. I felt like she would be taking the nap because I'm prone to get in a hurry, and when I set my needle down, I go out too far sometimes. And it doesn't look very nice when you
How
do that.
How far is too far? How many stitches to the inch?
Well, I don't know. She done about as small stitches as any quilting that I've ever seen. But not me. I would make three or four small ones and then a long one. And it wasn't consecutive like it should have been.
Then she had a lot to do with teaching you quilting then.
Right. She sure did.
Now, is the quilting or the piecing? More or less the quilting?
The quilting. Right.
What do you like best, the piecing or the quilting?
I like the quilting.
Why?
I just feel like that I accomplished so much. When I put in a quilt, it's a challenge to me. I can put in a quilt like today, and all day tomorrow, I'd better not put anything on the stove to cook, because if I do, it'll burn.
Then you really get carried away with it.
I get into it. I concentrate on it. I want to stay with it until my fingers get so sore that I have to cover it up and take a break for my fingers to heal.
Do you listen to the radio or watch television while you're quilting?
I watch TV sometimes in the afternoons. But a lot that I quilt is at night. Quilt a lot and all.
Then do you do most of your quilting here in the living room?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Right in front of the picture window. And I got a portable phone I bring in here so I can talk on the phone. Right in front of the TV, and the fireplace is in here where I can keep the fire going and stay warm.
And would you say you spend most of your time in the evening quilting, or is it throughout the day?
Well, usually in the afternoon and the evening.
How many hours a day, or how long a time do you guess that you spend quilting at a time?
At each session?
Uh-huh.
Oh, sometimes 2-3 hours. Sometimes too long till my feet get numb. I need to get up at least every hour, but I don't always do that. Especially at night when I come in, if it's a movie on and I sit down, sometimes I won't get up, get myself ready for bed. When I've started quilting at 6 and it's 11:30.
So. Oh my, then you do go for long periods.
I go for long periods of time. I feel like that anything that you want to do and want to get it done, you've got to get in there and stick with it. You've got to buckle down to it and stay there.
But now, do you do this for pleasure as well as, why do you quilt?
Just for pleasure.
Just for pleasure. Is that why you quilted in the first place?
That's right.
Way back when?
Well, no. When I first made a home, I had need for quilts because we had a wood stove and the fire would go out at night, and we had needs for quilts to cover the beds to keep us warm. Now, that's not the case because I have an electric blanket. I quilted my bedspreads. I've quilted each one of my grandchildren, which is Michelle, that's 12. Tracy is 10, and Jason is 7. I've quilted all of their bedspreads, and the girls, I made the pillow shams and quilted them with them. Last fall, I quilted 2 quilts. One was a king size for Paul Dwight and his wife Pamela for Christmas. It was what's called a grape basket pattern, and had a lot of lavender purple in it. It was king size for the king size bed. I quilted it, and I had it in the living room here, and they come to visit us twice, and I had to roll it up and I hide it under my king-size bed so they wouldn't see it. And I also did a great basket, a full-size quilt, for Keith and Lisa for their Christmas present, and it was alternated with lavender blocks that I did a design in. Each one of them had a border around them. And that was their Christmas gifts. And I wasn't sure that these daughter-in-laws would understand the value of it. So after they opened them, they seemed real happy with them. But usually when I give a quilt, I give it to the lady and I get the gentleman something else. But not this time. I thought, no, he's going to sleep under it too.
And
he's
going to
be using it too. And it's my son. So I gave them a little pep talk, and I said, now, if you don't realize that that king-size quilt is a valuable gift, then you just go buy you one. Because I felt like that it was at least a $500 gift.
I would think so, and you were concerned that they wouldn't really appreciate what you'd given them.
I was afraid that they didn't know the value of a quilt.
Let's talk about the value of quilting and the value of quilts.
Okay.
What is the value of quilting?
It's invaluable. I don't think you can put a value on it. It is something that is so precious that needs to be passed on to our children and grandchildren. I went to visit my son and his wife that have three children about 3 weeks ago, and we put in her quilt in her family room. I've quilted one block on it, and thus far she has done seven. I was up there over the weekend. And my granddaughter, that's 10 years old, sat there and said, Ma, show me how. Show me how, Ma. And I said, okay, I sure will. And I gave her an unthreaded needle to show her with.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now when you get where you can pick up a stitch, like that we're doing, we'll thread your needle and you'll do a block. And when I left up there Sunday afternoon, she was still practicing with her needle. It's important to me that I pass it down because I feel like that it's going to be a lost art if we don't pass it down.
So you feel like that it's a valuable part of our heritage.
It really is important. It's important because there's so many people. Well, it's just like I went back to school to get my high school diploma. It was important to me because I wanted to do it. And that's the reason I think people ought to quilt. It's just because they want to do it. There's so many people that's sitting around on benches in towns and sitting in the courthouse squares that I feel like they don't want to learn anything. And I've been a learner all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take so many classes. For instance, the basket class. We have basket classes in town all the time, and it's great, and it is a thing that needs to be passed down because it's original. But I didn't want to go take the class. I went to the store and got me a book, and I figured it out on my own.
Well, not everybody can do that.
No, not everybody can do that, but that's the way I want to learn.
Okay.
I want to learn how to do things on my own. And it irks me sometimes because some people don't want to learn anything.
But now, you talk about wanting to learn things on your own. But now when it comes to quilting, you've taught quilting.
Right.
So there are some of these skills that are taught.
They are taught.
If you learn on your own, you're not getting this community.
Well, now when I teach, I'm different about teaching than what most people are about teaching. When I go into a classroom, I have my instructions there in black and white for people to read that they can take home with them. I also show them how to do it, but then I expect to see the finished product.
You expect them to take what you've taught and
apply it.
But sometimes seeing somebody do something and having that personal experience with the teacher helps you learn things that you can't learn off of a piece of paper.
That's right. The first thing that I like to do when I start teaching a class, I've had two classes, quilting classes, in October. This is okay if I lead right on into it.
All right, sure.
Okay. In October of 84, I had an 18-hour quilting class at the library. And I had, it was sponsored by the Allen County League of Artists and Craftsmen that has been organized in the last few years. It started out that I would have an 18-hour class. It would run Tuesday and Thursday night, 3 hours each night for 3 weeks. So we advertised it to find out what the interest would be, and I had 19 students that signed up for it. They come to the class, the organizational meeting, they came, filled out an application, and I assigned them a piece of material and an outline of a block to do, and I showed them the block. It was the original O-line patch that I thought would be simple for them to do. And they was to take this home with them and do it to a specific size, and then bring the block back to me. I put them together myself so that we would have the quilt ready to put in at the next session. We put in the quilt, and we quilted that quilt, and I turned out 13 good quilters, excellent quilters. Then in February of 85, I had another quilting class, and I had learned lots of things from my first one. So I only had 11 students signed up for it, and we did one quilt. Now the first session, where there was 19 quilts, we also tacked quilts, which was done with bedspread crochet thread, with it doubled, and it tacked about an inch and a half apart, and then the threads clipped. And that let the little threads stand up all over it. These two quilts were sold at our Christmas show in 1984 in order to sponsor the next quilting class. And then in 85, in February, we quilted a quilt that was sold at our December show to sponsor another class, hopefully in the fall of this year. But the first thing that I do when I go into the classroom, the first thing that I did with those 19 students was I gave them a pep talk. And I said, now don't come to my class and say, I cannot do it, because you can do anything I can do. And I told them a little story about when I went to work for a few weeks at a factory that I worked at, when my oldest son was little. I went to work, I decided I'd get me a job. And this interviewer asked me, said, what do you think you can do? I said, anything anybody else can do. I was hired. But the same day he also asked me, if your children get sick, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to stay home, because my children come first. And before I was put to work, he said, we wouldn't want you any other way. And I went to work, and in about 4 weeks, I quit because of my son being so unhappy. And I come home. I explained to the man why that I quit, and he did understand, because my son was having a nervous problem. It was his first year of school, and he was very upset. But I explained to these students, you might not do it as fast, you might not do it as well, but you can do it. And don't ever put yourself down to the level that you cannot. And what I tried to do was build up their confidence that they could do it. And everything's not always perfect. I've been quilting for, my grandchildren say 100 years. But the point of it is, I'm still not a perfect quilter. And if I live to be 100 years old, I will not be a perfect quilter. But at least I do it.
And you keep striving to improve.
I keep striving every time, every quilt I put in. The next quilt that I want to do, the one I have in now, is a piece out of materials from Derby Underwear Factory in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I used the 9-patch because of the different kinds of materials, and I have 42 blocks in it, and all of them are different. All the prints are different, and 42 blocks.
My.
All set together with light blue. And then the strips are a pale green with a little peach square that set it together, and then I have a striped border all around it. But the next quilt I want to do a stained glass. A friend came by yesterday, and I was showing her the pattern I was going to do, and she said, "Do you have a specific place that you're going to put that?" And I said, "No, but I just want to do it."
Well, then your approach to teaching your classes is quite different than teaching your granddaughter.
Right.
Now, let's see, you didn't have any daughters to teach to quilt. Who else in your family have you taught anybody else in the family?
My daughter-in-law.
Your daughter-in-law?
Dwight's wife, Pamela.
And
she is quilting.
How did you teach her?
She pieced the top herself. And we got the padding at Walmart's and we put it in. And she helped me roll it. And she just looked how to pull the knot through to the inside, and she started quilting. Her first 3 or 4 stitches, she'd say, "No, that's not good enough," and she'd have to take them out. But I showed her how to use her thumb for her top stitches and her forefinger under the bottom of the quilt to shorten her stitches as the needle as it went down. Because without the feeling, you couldn't quilt. And she had never wore a thimble before. And that's another thing. When I go into the classroom, I wear my thimble. At the organizational meeting, I say, "If you don't have one, get one to fit you, because that's your power." And I stick that middle finger up on my sewing hand with that thimble on it, because that is definitely your power, and you cannot get it through there without that thimble.
Then it depends on who your pupils are, how you approach it.
Well, yes, if I'm teaching small children, I would do it with a little square or something, and rather than putting them in a quilt and setting them down. But teaching my daughter-in-law, I want to give her the challenge of doing a whole quilt. And she had, when I went up there over the weekend, she had a whole row done and had rolled it. But what she hadn't done was pulled it tight enough that the lining was sagging. So I pointed that out to her, and I said, "Now, pull it tight enough. Work it tight enough on your rollers, because we're using horses. We're not using the 4 frames. They look kind of like saw horses that the 2 frames fit down in."
Now, well, let's talk about the different kinds of quilting frames since you brought it up. Now, your mother used the ones that you suspend from the ceiling.
Right.
And
for the rope.
They had the holes in them, and you
stick a nail down.
Stuck a nail in to keep them in place. Now, here in your living room, I see sawhorses. Now, you tell me about that. Is that what you've used most of the time?
That's what I've used most of the time. And in the later years, after I'd married and left home, my mother had got her some horses that she used. And I don't know whatever happened to those, but my husband made my frames. He went to the lumber company and got the wood to do it with. And there were actually about 2x2s, about 15, 16 feet long is what the side rails are, that you roll it around, and you tack your lining in. I don't fasten anything down but the lining in my quilting, because if you fasten the top down, you eventually have to loosen it anyway, because they're not going to pull the same tightness. But then he made these little horses that have the little 4 legs that set out with the braces across the top with little notches down in that little side frames do fit down into. And they're about what we call 2 reaches of quilting. You can quilt on one side and then go around on the other side and quilt on the other side. Mm-hmm. And then when you get those reaches done, while you roll it, you roll one side over and the other side under. That's what causes your top and lining to go the same tightness all the time.
Have you ever used a hoop?
On one quilt, but never again.
What kind of hoop was it? Was it a freestanding one or just one on your
Well, lawn? I tried it with freestanding. I do have the stand that it goes on, but I ended up with it out on my lap. And I just don't like it. It's just absolutely different to quilting and doing a good job of it to me. That the grape basket that I did for Keith and Lisa before Christmas, I did it in a hoop. And I just prefer the horses over it.
So you just stick to what you, well, that's probably what you started with, wasn't it?
No, I started, you know, in those swinging triangles where the whole quilt was wide out.
And they didn't roll those?
Not till they do, they started on one side and rolled it up. That's what they did.
So as soon as they did a reach on one side, they just pulled it from one side.
Yeah, just rolled it up, yeah.
What are some of your favorite patterns? Your favorite patterns.
Okay, it's really according what kind of quilt that you're going to do and the purpose of that quilt, what kind of pattern that you would have. If you want to give it for a gift that, that's not too an expensive gift, then you would want to use something simple like the nine patch or the bow tie or something that you could put together simple. But if you want to hand it down to your grandchildren or somebody on down through the years, then you want to preserve that quilt, then you'd want to put more work into it. Now, one that I have done like that is I went to the store and I bought several packages of cross-stitch patterns, and I bought a sheet and I stamped it off like I wanted it. I put a peafowl in the middle, I embroidered it, and then I stamped off what I wanted around it. And then I quilted it. I drew my own quilting designs, and as a matter of fact, when I got one side quilting and rolled my quilt, I'd have to open it to find out what I'd done on the other side. But I did put a lot of work into it. I like the long star. It's easy to do. Lots of people think that you have to put those points down in and go around and around on this star, but that's not the case. You put it in little lines and then make the big star, big diamond, and then sew all your diamonds together and you've got it made. I like to do those. I've made two of those, and I piece a lot of squares and half squares. I do one that I've done is called the Rising Star.
Yes.
And I do some applique, and I also paint. I've painted about four different quilts, and some I use the Vogart tube painting, and quilt those. And I usually do on all my quilts, draw all my quilting designs. I like to.
Your quilting designs are original.
Right, they are original. And as a matter of fact, I decided that I would redo my bedroom, and I had papered with some pastel flowers that had pink and blue and had a yellow flower in it. So I went and got yellow sheets, and I made a king-size bedspread. It's got a ruffle from the corner down, but the whole top of the bed is quilted, and it goes over the pillows too. I drew all my quilting design on that, and then I made the ruffle curtains just like my bedspread. And I've also made several flowered bedspreads that I have just quilted. I just buy the sheets, the flowered sheets, and draw my quilting designs and just quilt them.
Then you like the solid color and let the quilting be the pattern.
Yes, on the most of them I do.
But when it comes to piecing, you like nine patch and lone star?
Yes, I like. And a lot of half squares. I use squares and half squares.
And geometric shapes.
Yes.
Okay. Then most of your patterns are original. Do you take any quilt books or quilt magazines?
I take the Work Basket magazine, which has started having all the states quilt patterns in it. And in the near future, I'm planning on doing a sampler quilt of all the state quilt patterns, because they all are the same size. They're 12-inch blocks. And I'm really interested in doing something like that.
But do you use patterns out of books or magazines very much?
Not very much. I usually cut my own.
Yeah, okay. Do you have favorite colors? Do you find yourself working with the same color a lot, or?
No. I don't know what the word is to use. See, I paint also. I paint on canvas. Mm-hmm. And I use colors together that's nobody else has put together.
So you like to experiment with color.
Right. Some people think, I don't know, I have it in my mind that some people think that you only need two color settings in one room. Not me. I think you ought to have red in every room, along with your browns and blues and greens and orange or whatever you've got. I think
you ought
to have
red. How about red in every quilt?
I think there ought to be some red in every quilt.
Why?
I don't know. I guess it's just because that the way I see. I see bright. Now, in a lot of my paintings, I see dark. My sons, they could critique all my work, and they fuss at me because that I use so much darks in my paintings. They say, it's too dark. But that's the way I see it, you know. And when I paint water, I put what I think's down underneath, under that water, and let some of it show through. And that's kind of the way I am with my quilting. Now, this quilt that I have in from the underwear plant, to me they are too soft. I didn't have enough deep colors to go with it. I like the log cabin pattern because I like to put black in a quilt. I like to put black and I like to put red prints with it. Mm-hmm. And I
why,
like...
Why black?
Huh?
Why black?
To me... Well, even back when I was small, all the log cabin quilts that I saw that old people had, they had black in them.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like it's supposed to be?
I feel like it just should be there to look like the logs, because in paintings, if I paint a house, the first thing I do is outline it in black. And then when I put this white front on it, I let a little of that black edge show through. If you don't, there's not a line. And that's kind of the way I feel about the lines of my quilt. I think they need to show.
They need to be outlined.
Right. Okay. And that's why I always put a border on my quilt, on my quilts. Most of the time, because to me it's not finished. It's incomplete.
So you put now do you piece your borders, or do you with a different pattern, or what kind of borders do you use?
I like a stripe. Border with all the stripes going out all around the quilt, you know, going mm-hmm. from the quilt out. I don't like them going lengthways with the quilt or anything. I like them going out. Sometimes I use just a coordinating print that's in the quilt for the border.
What do you do with your old quilts?
With my old quilts?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
When they start to wear out.
Well, I'll tell you what we used to do with them. We covered the back up with them to keep it in order. That's what my mother did with hers when they got so lumpy they couldn't be slept on or something, you know. But, or slept under. We take them on picnics and lay on them, let the ants crawl on them, I guess, is about what we do.
Use them up.
Yeah, right. A lot of people sell them at yard sales and things like that. I don't, because to me they're still valuable. I don't sell anything like that. I might give something away, but I won't sell it like that.
Have you ever sold a quilt?
No. And I don't plan to. It's too bad.
Do you sign your quilts?
No.
Sign your paintings?
Yes, I sign my paintings, but I don't sign my quilts. I make my quilts to use. To me, that's a little bit different because even the PFAL that I done so much work and everything on, when I have company, I put it on the bed. Because to me, quilts last better if they are used.
Well, signing them doesn't mean not using them.
No, that's
but it
true,
means
but
that,
we just never done it, and we just never felt like that it was important to.
Do you still feel that way? How about that great-granddaughter that's going to want to know what your name was?
Well,
or what
I hope
year
she'll
you
read it,
it
on this tape.
Yeah. Well, when you, sign them and put the date on them. Another reason why we're doing this taping is to have a recorded history of quilting. Many lovely quilts are known about, but we know not one whit about who made them or when.
True, that's wrong.
And then, too, if they're dated and you have current fabrics in them, it gives you a place to start dating other quilts. So it gives you just the date on the quilt. It gives you a lot of information when you're documenting. Think about it. It would be nice to put your name on them. What kind of thread do you use when you quilt?
I use the hand quilting thread, the extra strong hand quilting.
And what size needle do you use?
Small. The smallest that I can get to make my stitches, but not too narrow a needle. I'm confused on the size that I do have because I got one package that said one size, that they was going up one way, and then another company had them going down the other way as being smaller. So I've got confused on them, so I just go actually by what I used to use was a size 7. Mm-hmm. And
did you say different manufacturers size them different?
They do size them different, and that gets confusing.
Have you ever put a quilt in a show or won any prizes with your quilts?
Yes, I did my PFAL quilt, and also a tacked quilt that was made out of double knit.
Where'd you, what, tell
it,
me?
It was in the one that was sponsored by the Allen County League of Artists and Craftsmen in March of 85. And I won first place on two quilts.
And one of them was in the embroidered and quilted.
Embroidered.
Original embroidery, and what was the other classification?
The other one was in the tacked group, mm-hmm. and it was double knit fabrics.
Are those the only prizes you've won?
Uh-huh.
Are there any other superstitions or customs that you can think about besides always redding a quilt or bouncing the caddy in it that you can think about that gone with quilting over the years?
No, offhand, I can't. I may think of something tomorrow, but right now I can't.
Have you ever heard the term Kentucky quilt? Somebody wants a Kentucky quilt.
A Kentucky quilt?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing on the Kentucky State quilt pattern.
Okay. What, in your opinion, makes a good quilt?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not necessarily the small stitches, it's how well, of course, the kinds of materials has all to do with it, and the kinds of thread that you use, and then...
What kinds of materials are best?
Well, I use cotton polyester, because if you use all cotton when it's washed, naturally, it gets to looking worse and worse and worse in a hurry. And I think a little polyester mixture helps it a lot. I also use polyester batting now.
That's quite different than what you used to use.
It sure is. But they don't knot up as bad. They last to me better. The fastening your thread when you quilt, is an important factor. I think it's not necessarily the short stitches. I think the stitches should be uniform, but it's fastening your thread and making that back invisible back stitch enough that your thread, and running it long enough in between that it won't come apart.
That's fastening off the end of it.
Fastening the end of it when you get to where you're going on each line.
And then you pull your knot through, though.
Yes, pull the knot through. I usually try to put it in a seam where that it will be fastened if it's close to a seam where I can. But fastening that thread down, I think, is really an important factor because it will hold your batting in place.
Then you think it's uniform stitches, good fabric, not having your beginning and ending show. Mm-hmm. What about colors? All of these things go to make what you consider a good quilt.
Yes, I think so. Of course, the stretching of the quilt, the top and the bottom in uniformity, makes a good quilt. I don't like to see puckers in my quilts at all. I like them to be stretched equally. Mm-hmm. And,
do you have trouble doing that when you put one in by yourself?
No, I've put in some in. It just comes natural. I can't think what I want to say. There's a way to do things, to do just about anything. There's a technique to it that you can learn on just about doing anything. And the technique that I've learned is to work that quilt down tight on each roller. Twist it tight on each roller. And then you won't have any problem pulling it tight from one roller to the other. I think that's the main thing, is get it on your roller tight.
We were talking about how materials have changed over the years, from your feed sacks and your scraps of cotton now to polyester. You've made double knits.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is current, and the batting. You use all polyester now.
Yes, I do.
Do you feel that you have to quilt that as close as you do the cotton?
It's really not as necessary to. As far as the wash and wear of it, it's really not as necessary to.
But do you still quilt close?
I usually quilt by the piece. Mm-hmm. If it's a pattern where there's a big circular design or something, well, for instance, my Lone Star quilt, I pieced all the little diamonds by piece, and then the corners, see? I quilted it in straight lines, and I went one way on it, running right along with the straight lines in these little diamonds, and then I turned back the other way on that, and it made it quilted in diamond shapes, all in the corners. Yet it was a big block about 18 inches square. It was still quilted in little diamonds.
It still looked like the diamonds
in
the
star, right.
Like you carried it on out.
Yes, right. And I like to do that. I like to do things like that. And I had some lessons back in the early 1950s on sewing, cutting, fitting, and design. I took that out of Chicago, Lessons by Mail.
Mm-hmm.
And that design lessons helped me really more than anything, I think, as far as doing my quilts.
Arranging the colors, or?
Arranging the colors, and also doing my quilting designs. So, because I can draft my own patterns if I need to, or I can take a size 20 pattern and change it to a size 12 if I want to. So.
That's a difficult thing to do. Well, what other things do you have there you want to share with me about your quilt?
I'd like to talk a little bit more about my quilting class.
By all means.
And about the steps that I took in this quilting class after the registration organizational meeting, and they quilted the block. Then they came back the first week. I handed them out a sheet of paper that gave them instructions of what all they needed in order to do this quilt. And that they should first decide what kind of a quilt that they actually want what size the quilt should be, choose their pattern, and to piece a block of this pattern before they cut out all of their quilt, because it might not work. And then you wouldn't have ruined so many pieces. Make the top for the quilt, and then purchase the right size for the lining. And then I gave them a list of the things that they needed in order to do their quilt at home. And this was actually take-home work. And I suggested kinds of materials that they could use. I explained to them about the warp and the woof of the material, crosswise and lengthwise. And the different kinds, like the polyester and cotton and so on. And about that they could buy sheets for the linings, but to be sure to watch the thread count, because the thread count, if it gets too high, then it's woven too closely to use.
Then you use sheets on the back of your quilt?
I do use a lot of sheets on the back of mine. And I really like about 134 threads per inch. If you get 180 threads per inch, then it's hard to quilt. It will make your threads your hands sore pulling the threads through, you see. And then I handed them a picture of a quilt that was just outlined with the border around it, the solid blocks, and the strips between. And I explained to them how to measure for their quilts, to know what size they need, and then they can figure out how to cut their pieces to know exactly how that they're going to do it. And be sure to add their border on and to always count for seams. And then I gave them sheet 4 was a picture of the block that is within the 9 patch itself. And I told them to cut 4 solid and 5 patterned, and that each block is 4.5 inches with a 1/4 inch seam to come out with a 12 inch finished block. And I found out that a lot of students, even though that was really simple, a lot of them had difficulty with that, because they didn't understand that this 1/4 inch seam come off of each little block, and that made it 1/2 inch come off, and then when you take it all off, it takes it down to the 12 inch block. So we had to study that quite a bit for them to understand that. And then when you put the 9 patch together, and you take off all these 1/4 inch seams, I showed them by shaded blocks and clear blocks, and that you can reverse the colors on that according to the materials if you want to. And then I showed them how to do the binding on sheet 6. I showed them how to cut it on the bias. You would be surprised how many people in this world that doesn't know the straight of the grain, the crosswise of the grain, and the bias of the material. And I explained to them at the first session that even though you are well advanced in this quilting, I plan to start out with you as if you know not one thing about it, because I don't know what you do know. So if you think that I think you're dumb, you just remember that I don't know what you know and what you don't know. So I start out with them just as if it is a first grade lesson on studying a rule and applying it to material. And then we had a lesson on coordinating colors.
It sounds like your course is quite complete.
Right. It was a complete course. And then also I taught them in the same sessions, I taught them the tacking, and we had a pattern that was called a tulip quilt, and this was their take-home project. Because they couldn't take the quilt home, it became the property of the league, mm-hmm. and was to be sold to raise money for the league. And so what I did, I gave them red material, green material, and a block of white, and they cut out their own tulips, and then I gave them all some embroidery thread, and I taught them the applique stitch.
Okay, then they piece the tulip and applicate it to the block.
They put it to the block.
So they learned piecing and quilting and applique and tacking
all in
this same...
And an 18-hour class.
Well, that is quite a broad spectrum there, and I think that when people left it, they had a good basic knowledge of quilt making.
They did. You would be surprised how many out of the 19 students have come back and showed me their tulip block that they have completed, even with the ruffle around it with a cushion. And I have gotten calls from at least 5 of the students that having quilts quilting them.
How nice. That must make you very proud.
It does. It really does. It's that's what it does to you when you're passing it on down to somebody. That's the reason I'm glad to do what I'm doing today and putting this on tape. If it helps one person, it's worth it all.
Indeed it is. You have some other notes down there. Have we covered all the things that you jotted down in preparation for this?
I don't know if we have
or not.
Well,
let's look and see. I just want to get all from you I can while I've got you here.
I can't think of anything else that we hadn't covered. I'd just like to say one thing on this tape, that if there's any students that listen to the tape, the importance that I would like to say to you is for you to have the courage to try it and the courage to do it. If I can incite one student to try it and accomplish it and then pass it on down to your generations as long as time lasts, then it will be of great value.
Well, I think that's great, Dilsey, and I can't thank you enough for giving me of your time and your experience and all of this to share not only with me but with the Heritage Project and for the archives. And I do thank you, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to do this.
You're certainly welcome.